From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on June 22nd. That is Election Day. It's primary day. One of the races that voters will see on the ballot is Rochester City Council. Nearly 20 candidates are running for 5 seats. Over the next several weeks, we'll bring the candidates onto this program so you can hear them at length, an opportunity to learn about their platforms and priorities and to ask them your questions directly. We'll also discuss a number of issues that have put our city in the national spotlight in recent years. Policing, COVID-19 and vaccination, the economic impact of the pandemic, state policy, and more. City Council will have a serious hand in responding and setting policy on policing, police reform, economic development, plans for our neighborhoods and the future. And let's welcome three of the candidates running for Rochester City Council. Louis Aponte is a paramedic with Monroe Ambulance and a community activist. Louis, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the invite.
Kim Smith is a statewide organizer for Vocal NY, a former candidate for the New York State Senate and a member of the People's Slate in this race. Kim, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Evan. And hello, Louis.
And also hello to Alex White, a local activist, organizer, former candidate for mayor, small business owner. Alex, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me back.
I'm going to ask all of you to first just briefly tell us about yourselves, introduce yourself to voters, and give us a sense for why you're running. Louis, I'll start with you.
Okay. Well, my name is Louis Aponte. I'm a city homeowner, family man. I have 4 children, one that's still in the city school district. All of my children went to the city school district. I've been a paramedic in Monroe County for going 32 years this August. So I have my experience in dealing with the neighborhoods, every neighborhood across the city, and now even the county. I was the first Hispanic male paramedic in Monroe County. Did some traveling through MCC, through FLCC, to dealing strictly with EMS. A community activist. I'm kind of I'm the chair of CHNA, which is Charles House Neighbors in Action, which represents the Josiana Neighborhood Association, and also former chair of Sector 3, which took care of a lot of the northwest part of the city from Driving Park South to Main Street. Homeowner, property owner, activist, friend of the neighbors, friend of the schools. Heavy involvement with School 17 and bringing back the community school model, which I'm very, very proud of. And that is just a team effort in bringing everyone together.
All right. Kim Smith, same question for you.
Yes. Yeah, so, Evan, as you mentioned, I just recently, as of last primary, ended a Senate campaign where I lost a 3-way primary by less than 1% of the vote. And I certainly would not be running now, especially after such an intense run, if not for so many community members who found that this would be a good fit for me. And the People's Slate, who also thought enough of me to have me join them. And on the People's Slate, I am surrounded by candidates who share a world view and belief and believe that our run is a meaningful and necessary run. Because outside of our platform, we stand solid on the 4 principles of social justice: equity, access to resources, our human right to a quality life where all are treated with dignity and respect because all life has value. And number 4 is active participation in government and decision making. And that is our worldview for a better Rochester. And personally, I have been in service in this community for over 30 years. I have been in outreach, I have been in activism, and I have been in administration doing policy writing. And I found that the most effective way to advocate for change is to be a part of the decision-making process and to be at the table. So thank you all for listening.
Alex White, same question for you.
Well, I'm Alex White. I hope I'm familiar to some of you. I am a business owner. I have a business on Monroe Avenue that I started. It's a co-op business and been around for 25 years. I am an executive board, institutional board member at Oasis, the school that provides training to adults without a high school education and places them in jobs in the city of Rochester. I've worked with UCLM. I'm a co-chair of their Community Justice Advisory Board. I meet with the police department. I was an advocate for body cameras and helped develop the policy and push for them. I've been involved in lots of actions and lots of the efforts to reform in Rochester, and I have previously, as you mentioned, run as a Green Party candidate for mayor of Rochester, and this time I'm setting my sights on city council, and I hope that the voters will agree this is a good fit.
All right. Listeners, if you want to ask questions, you can email the program connections@wxxi.org. Connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. All right, so let's talk about one of the major issues facing our community, and that is the subject of policing. Rochester City Council has commissioned its own investigation, independent of the mayor, independent of the police department, and City Council certainly has a hand and what happens in the future of police reform in this community. I'm going to start with Kim on this. What is the priority for you if you're elected to Rochester City Council as it pertains to police reform? What's happening now that you support? What needs to change? What would your priority be?
So, first, Evan, thanks for the question. Two of our primary platforms of the slate is to reimagine public safety and police reform. And I have to tell you, when Executive Order 203 came out, really ordering municipalities and localities to reimagine public safety and develop a plan for how that would look, I was really excited about how we would move forward in the city of Rochester. And when you simplify the language in that executive order, you will find that it gives six guiding principles that localities should focus on when adopting a plan. And within that, I took a look at the policing plan that the city council voted on last night. And I found some challenges and I found some successes. So number one, it appears the plan was responsive to each of the six guiding principles. It wants to scrap the contract with the Police Locust Club, which is certainly a benefit. And it proposes strong disciplinary actions for officers who harm and kill. So they want to terminate their employment, but they also understand that that demands changes in the civil service law, and they want to downsize the department. What the plan lacks for me, and what some of the challenges are that we want to address moving forward, is it lacks specificity in most of the 11 action areas. For example, in the accountability section, there is no mention of how the PAB will be used, and I think that the PAB needs to be independent. Under the community engagement and programming, it says that they would advocate for more resources, but doesn't necessarily mean, and more doesn't necessarily mean fully functional. It talks about data, technology, and transparency, and it gives the what, but not the how. And then when we talk about fostering a community and is in fostering a community-oriented culture, it talks about educating officers, and I believe that our officers have had much education, and I don't understand why that action item was actually did not mention any mention of direct community involvement, and officer wellness had more points of action than fostering a community-oriented culture. So one of the things that I would want to look at, and they said that they were giving themselves a year to roll out that plan, one of the things that I would want to look at, one of the priorities, of course, would be to reimagine by looking at those 11 action items and definitely giving them more specificity and more meat.
Some of the supporters of the so-called People Slate, of which you're a part, Kim, some of the supporters of that slate have said that, we can imagine a future without police entirely. Do you agree with that?
I think that we can certainly get there, but I think it's really all about getting there. So when you look at, Evan, the history of policing, in the South, in the 1700s, they were called patrol groups to stop runaway slaves. And then in the North, they formed a formal police force to control immigrants. So when we look historically at policing in New York State, where the first police department was formed, we can see that there has always been a racial and class element there. And in fact, based on that, some of the tensions were, how do police align and build relationships within the communities where they are present while simultaneously giving the middle and upper class the power and political control they desire? And even today, some of those same tensions exist. And while we are trying to deal with those tensions and having no really specific plan on dealing with them, people are dying at the hands of the police. And we can't wait for those tensions to work themselves out. We must save lives and enhance the quality of life, and we have to do it now. And so defund the police and reinvest in communities offers a comprehensive ideology that allows that transformation to take place through conversation and innovative alternatives. So I think as we imagine, reimagine public safety, we need to our first step is to defund the police, reinvest in the community, to give the community confidence in what a community would look like when it is not heavily policed. And I believe we can certainly get there.
Louis Aponte, how do you see the subject of police reform, the role of city council, and what your priorities would be?
Well, I see the role of police reform as, first, I don't believe that getting rid of the police is the answer. I actually feel like fixing the police department is the first answer. Crime is not going to go away. I don't think crime will ever go away. I really feel that, number one, there is a humongous issue within confidence and support of the police department because they are not addressing, well, for a better term, their bad apples. I feel that we need to invest to get rid of those bad apples. I do support the fact that part of this new legislation is to also penalize officers for not reporting bad behavior and issues with other officers that are doing bad things. As a first responder myself, over 30 years in this community, I can tell you that I don't feel we have a bad white police officer problem. I feel we have a bad police problem. I feel that people that look like me and people that don't look like me that are police officers are causing these rifts in our community. And, you know, I've seen all of this over my years, not only in the city, but also in the county. So I feel we need to take and find an independent group, whether it's the New York State Troopers or another agency, to come in and clean up our police department. We have a lot of great officers on the department from every color, from every background, from every community that want to do good things, you know, and I feel it's those few bad apples that are causing these problems. And that's the same problem across the country. I can't say that every police officer in every department needs to be completely defunded and we need to get rid of them. I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is let's get rid of the bad police. Now, what do I feel the city council needs to do? City council has to be transparent and really force this issue and not hide and not have no answers to give. I think we need to be able to address the public that elects us and puts us in those seats to address these problems and not act like they don't exist, because these problems do exist. but we need to deal with them swiftly. We can't wait for 6 months of red tape to tell us that we did something wrong or to finally admit that something might have happened. No, something did happen. I'm in full support of the body cams. I'm in full support of the police department being under this microscope until we weed out all of these bad apples. I also feel that starts with leadership. The leadership of the police department has to stand by and really act and be strong towards the police department. I feel that, you know, no one is born blue. We're born white, black, or brown. Okay, so I just feel that we need to support our community and support the police that are out there doing the good jobs. I feel city council has to refund departments that help get our youth off the street, that help get our youth into programs, whether it's job trainings or things of that sort, getting involvement with the police and the youth programs. The police athletic league was huge when I grew up in the city, from playing basketball, from playing baseball. So I feel those are things that when they got defunded, it hurt the relationship of the community. Because when us as kids were out there playing with the police departments, playing all kinds of sports and involved, our parents were also there. The relationship between the parents and the police department and the people that patrolled our area. I come from a genre and from a time where the police department had a section offices, which I felt was the greatest thing because we knew what police officers were policing our community. I think that's a big thing that I would fight for on council. Transparency is number one. I feel we need to stop hiding behind whatever curtain we want to call it and actually be transparent and answer to the community that elects us to be on that board.
Okay, Alex White, I'll ask you to pick up the same thread here. If you're on city council, what is your priority with policing?
Well, my first priority is to, you know, stop concentrating solely on policing and concentrate on public safety. We used to have a director of public safety that had various departments under it. At the moment, we have Pathways to Peace. We have the crisis intervention team. We have the police. We have the emergency communications department. All of those are siloed separately and seem to be working independently. I believe at the very least we would benefit from putting them all under one hopefully elected director whose job it would be to oversee a plan to increase public safety. Second, I think that the general and overall procedure of all police interactions with the public should be de-escalation. I think this has shown to have incredibly positive results, if nothing else, decreasing use of force. Currently, Rochester, about 7% of all arrests result in the use of force, and in departments that use de-escalation as their guiding principle, that number is half that. Now, if we want to reduce injury of black and brown people in the hands of police officers, we need to start by reducing the use of force. Second, I really, really would like to eliminate the PSS, which is basically the internal affairs in the police department, and move their entire investigation procedures under PAB. I think the Police Accountability Board is a better place for doing this. It lacks the close ties that the officers have with the people investigating them, and it will give us a more honest chance at justice against police officers. Now, I am for reducing the total number of police officers dramatically because I feel we often do not need a gun. And what police officers bring to every situation is a gun. We have instead burdened police with dealing with drug problems, with domestic disputes, with quality of life issues, and even in the evening they're dealing with parking and other issues, which, you know, could be done by a different agency with a different approach, with different training that could focus on conflict resolution and de-escalation. And I think that this would be a We should be reducing the officers based upon the calls for service to another group that could better deal with them and would be better trained to deal with them, because quite simply, the officers have the power to arrest and little else. And they don't have training to do much else, if you believe the report of the Attorney General, which said there is no de-escalation training at the Rochester Police Academy. So then I believe what we really want to do is we want to focus on the things that are going to reduce crime, like increased recreation, increased library hours, things like pathways to peace, street outreach, drug treatment, and summer jobs for kids. Because all of those have been shown to effectively reduce crime and reduce shootings, which is a huge problem in Rochester in the last 2 years. And I think the spending money on those things would get us far better results.
Let me go back to Kim Smith, because I started with Kim before she had a chance to hear what some of the other candidates in the race are saying. And so some of what, for example, Lewis is saying, Kim, you know, you hear from some who dissent from the idea that eventually there might not be a need for police, or that you can move to a dramatic change. Lewis is saying that he doesn't even see it as a white police problem. He sees it as an issue where you have bad apples in a department that it has to be addressed, but you want to be careful with overgeneralizing to all police or talking about eliminating police. What do you think, Kim?
I think it's neither black nor white. I think that many of the police today ascribe to that old-fashioned, militarized police culture that has existed and persisted throughout time. And so some of these conversations, we have been having these conversations for over 30 years. We have been talking about more trainings. We have been talking about cultural sensitivity. And there are certain things that you cannot train someone with a gun to have, and that's caring and compassion. And as we talk about police, we talk about crime. And when we talk about that word crime, I really do not like to use the word crime. And so I'm trying to work on that language myself, because the term crime puts every violator of the law under the same stereotypical umbrella that breeds judgment and police violence. So immediately when someone hears the word crime, they clutch their pearls, thinking that it's something related to violence. And when we think about even crime, police do not prevent crime. Resources and access to resources is what prevents crime. Police intervene once the crime has happened. And so we need to look at, when we talk about reimagining, we need to look at both of those elements, prevention and intervention. How do we prevent crime? More resources, better access to those resources. And Rochester has an abundance of resources. And then in intervention, how do you train, hire, and discipline individuals who carry a gun to deal with situations and de-escalation, as Alex mentioned, with care and compassion?
Do you agree, Lewis Apani, do you agree with Kim that part of the issue with policing is a warrior mentality? Is that a problem?
I think that goes back to my original answer. I mean, I think that's the mentality of each individual officer. You know, I can't say that she's wrong, but I can't say that she's right either. I think that the reimagining of the police and the resource, I agree 100%. One thing that Rochester is rich in is resources. You know, what we're not rich in is, or we haven't figured out, is how to exactly educate the community of the resources that we have available. Now, do I feel that there's a place for social workers to be? I 110% believe that there's places and interventions where the social workers need to be, and where their experience will be amazing, and it will come out with amazing outcomes. Do I feel that the police department and their training needs to have some training there for sensitivity and de-escalation? Of course. Anyone that disagrees with that is either immature or completely blind to what the situation is. I also know that in our communities today, okay, the raising of children and youth is way different than what it was 20 years ago. Okay, the way my parents raised me, I couldn't raise my children. Okay, and because they're facing different things in the community. The community is unsafe. We need, if we want the community to trust the police, then first of all, we have to clean up the department, number one. And number two, the loyalty comes from the police to the community. You know, so we have to build that relationship. We have to make the community safe. So then we could go on and move money around and put money in the services that are needed back into the youth, back into our neighborhoods, back into development, back in support of business owners. All of that needs to happen. But we're always so busy reacting to crime, like I hate that word too, Kim, I agree with you, and to the violence and, of course, to death. Okay? That is a big issue in this community, and it's not going to go away, but we need to make it better.
Okay, Alex White, you did touch on the idea of armed officers. Is there a warrior mentality? Is there a training issue that has to be addressed, Alex?
In fact, this is one of the biggest issues that I've been working on recently, is trying to get a better knowledge and a better understanding and changes into the training. And, you know, the department and many of the police around the county all say that, you know, there's de-escalation training that goes on in various parts, blah, blah, blah. But that's not what the Attorney General found. When you're training officers, you spend 120 hours on weapon and defensive tactics, which is basically fighting. When you put that much time into that, you know, when they're confronted with a situation, they fall back on their training and do that. We have, I mean, Dallas, which is not, should not be held up as the absolute model of police departments, but Dallas has a 3.4% use of force in arrests. We have a 7.6. Okay? We clearly have a problem in the way we train officers, because all they're doing is, when confronted with anything, they're resorting to force. And when force is used, it creates a potential for problems, injury, and harm. And that's what we should be trying to prevent. We're not going to be able to get force to zero, probably, at least in the near future, but we should be able to get it down to 3.4%. You know, and this all comes from the way we're training our officers and the way they're looking at it. I mean, going back to 79, I believe, they issued a report which was critical of the training of officers, and nothing really changed. They claimed officers should have an associate degree in criminal justice. They made all sorts of recommendations that didn't end up happening. We're in the same place with many of the same problems that led to that study, you know, what is it, 40 years ago, and, you know, we're still talking about training, and the Commission on Poverty,
RMAPI?
Yeah, not RMAPI, the one on
the Race Commission.
The Race one, came out with a report just recently, and if you read it, it comes out that they couldn't even get information on police training.
That's right.
I mean, that's insane. You know, we need to change the way they're trained. We need to use best practices from around the country. We need to change the general mentality of the way the officer is when they get out of the car.
Okay, let me ask, we're not going to spend the whole hour on police, and we're going to shift in just a moment here, but just briefly here, city council. City Council has recently approved in a 5-3 vote Monday afternoon a plan in which three members of council, as I mentioned, voted against it, a plan that calls for reducing the size of the police force over the course of the next 1 to 3 years and increasing the size of the crisis intervention team to make that team, those teams available 24 hours a day. There is also a call for a ban on the use of irritants like pepper spray on minors 15 and under. And there's a call to improve officer training and create a wellness program for officers for their mental health needs. But just on the subject of reducing the size of the police force over the next 1 to 3 years and increasing the size of the crisis intervention team, Kim Smith, would you have voted yes or no for that?
Without the specifics? No, I just need more specifics, because without the specifics, it is just an empty promise. We funded the crisis intervention team and, well, actually the crisis intervention office, and some of the programs within it have 10 staff and are unable to respond to anything. So when you say that we want to put more money into them, well, that is what was said in the beginning, and we ended up with 10 staff. So I just need more specifics. Yes, we need to remove money and put it more into community resources, but we need specifics around what that looks, because we know that Rochester, when we look at our sister cities, that Rochester has 26 and 27% more policing than our sister city. So we know that that reduction needs to happen, but we need numbers.
Okay. Lewis, if you were on city council, would you have voted yes or no?
No. I would have voted no.
Okay.
I just feel, you know, it's a lot. It's very easy to be on the outside and have an opinion. But not being at the table and being able to have a discussion, be part of the discussion of where and what the true needs are, I think that's a big problem. I think that there's a big lack of transparency. And for anyone that wasn't sitting in the room when these decisions were made, to make an educated guess will be inappropriate, because I guarantee that all the cards have been shown on the table.
Okay.
So I would have voted no, sir.
Alex White, how would you have voted?
As a city council member, and they do have the right and responsibility to actually make those numbers in the future. They could have done this at any time because they control the budget. If I was sitting in the room, we would have had numbers. I would have voted yes, and we would be moving forward already rather than kicking it back to the mayor to proceed, because city council, by charter, has the policy to already do these things. They just need to start doing these things rather than kicking it to other agencies to do it for them.
Our guests this hour are running for Rochester City Council in the June 22nd election. There are more than a dozen candidates, 5 open seats this year, and our goal is to bring them all to you at length so you can hear their views. You just heard Alex White, Kim Smith is with us, Lewis Aponte is with us, and after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back and talk about economic development. The mayor of Rochester on Friday called for essentially a plan for reparations using money that will be derived from the legalization of marijuana in New York State. And we'll ask for their thoughts on how else to make sure that we strengthen all neighborhoods, not just downtown, and how we address equity and economic development. This is Connections, and we're right back with them after the only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, the YMCA is closing another city location. It says, essentially, no one was using it anymore. But critics say most of the Y's recent investments have been in the suburbs, places like Pittsford, with a huge, gleaming new location. And what would have happened if you would have put that downtown? What happens to the Y in Rochester? We talk about its future Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Lewis Aponte, a paramedic with Monroe Ambulance and a community activist running for Rochester City Council. On Friday, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren said that it is long past time for reparations for black and brown people in the city of Rochester, and it can start with a plan to route the money that comes from marijuana legalization to those communities right here in Rochester. Do you agree with her?
I do agree. I do feel that the money needs to go into the neighborhoods. As an advocate and a strong advocate for rebuilding and development of the neighborhoods, any money that could come and be a reinvestment into these communities is much needed. Right now, the city's housing stock is so bad, you know, when from lead paint to just homes that are infested with roaches and rats, and neighborhoods that are just falling apart. We need a reinvestment into these communities. I use Josiana as an example. We have built over 94 new homes in a project that we call Stadium Estates through a partnership of not-for-profits with Charles Settlement House, with the involvement of CHNA, which I chair. And we just brought back homes. Residents needed new homes. You know, the city, believe it or not, was lacking rental property to put people in. But where the city make the mistake, I feel, they started reinvesting into homes that not even I can afford to live in. Okay, so our thing was, we need to bring homes back for families that could come back into the neighborhoods that are safe, rebuilding neighborhoods. I mean, Josiana alone had over 7 football fields of green space. And a lot of the green space was even full of contaminants from all the old car garages and the companies that were from even Tent City poisoned the grounds in these neighborhoods. So the reinvestment, yes, the money needs to come back to the neighborhoods. I understand we need to rebuild downtown also, but putting all these apartments downtown and not reinvesting and bringing back businesses into downtown, is, to me, is not the answer. I think let's solve our neighborhoods, and then the neighborhoods are going to tell you what they want their downtowns to look like.
Okay. Alex White, do you agree with the mayor on this one?
Well, that's a tough question. I've supported reparations for a very long time.
In other words, you're saying the mayor agrees with you on this one?
Sure, let's go with that. I mean, I have supported reparations for housing problems because of redlining. I have called the city's housing policy or building policy, which is basically giving money to large developers to build housing, which, as Lewis noted, regular people in Rochester can't even afford. I've called that racist, and the mayor even pointed out in her release that, you know, the city gives and government gives money to rich people all the time. Well, you know, I agreed with that statement. That's been a fundamental statement of most of my campaigns, that we should stop that. And, you know, I think that we definitely need to do something. I think we could easily, the amount of money is not enough to give payment to all the people in poverty in Rochester, because there's about 35,000 families that would qualify, and probably at least 25,000 of them would fall under the black or brown category. So, you know, we don't have enough money to make a difference in their lives, but we could do a home ownership program. We have a land bank here that could facilitate this. The payments from the marijuana tax to the city could be in the neighborhood of $10 million, or should be in that neighborhood, and that would be enough to probably do somewhere around 500 houses for home ownerships through the land bank by participation in both the auction process that the city has, in which they could preempt the auctions and do urban homesteading plan available only to families that meet certain criteria, black and brown, and incomes of a certain level. And like the program we used to have back 30 years ago, it would basically give the homes away to lottery winners. Then we also could work with banks to allow them to start making loans lower than $40,000 and to provide some sort of insurance so that some of the criteria for people could be lifted to help more families in Rochester afford houses, which would mortgages would be substantially lower than the rent they're currently paying. But most importantly, we need to stop giving money to rich people for building. We gave Morgan a $900,000 loan after he was indicted for bank fraud. I mean, this is the thing that goes on probably 6 times a year. City Council votes on it and approves the mayor's tax breaks and loans and grants and everything else to support this building, which is building us into greater poverty. And we need to stop that and instead use that money to lift up the people of Rochester, or if nothing else, have library hours that go at least to 9 o'clock. And at the community's rec center hours on weekends, things we had as recently as 10 years ago and are for the most part gone now.
Kim Smith, how do you feel about reparations, starting with the use of the money derived from legalization of marijuana, and how do you see it as a prong in economic development and redevelopment?
So I think first, I think the mayor had a great idea. And I think, like many leaders with many great ideas, we fail when it comes to implementation. And I firmly believe, being a resident of this city, that here in the city of Rochester, we have everything that we need in order to be successful. And when you add money like reparations, when you defund the police and decide to reallocate funds, and that's more revenue coming into the community, number one, if we want to look at neighborhood revitalization, look at the neighborhood association and block clubs that exist. These are very active organizations who are very solution oriented, but what they need in order to be successful are more resources and legislation. So we need to bring them into the conversation. And a lot of these resources that we have that exist, and even when you look at economic development, the number of job readiness and job placement programs that exist at the city level is actually phenomenal. What's missing is that information is not getting to the people who need it most. And before, as we went on break, you talked a lot about COVID relief and other pieces. And I'm thinking, what if we used some of that reparations money to create a peer-led and developed public health workforce where we pay peers to go out in what we often call hard-to-reach communities? And I really disagree that these communities that are really impoverished are hard to reach. No one tries hard enough to reach them. So why not pay for a peer-led workforce to go out to reach their peers, to link them to the necessary resources? And in terms of housing, because I heard in the mayor's plan, she wants to talk about housing. Well, I don't want to leave our most vulnerable and our most marginalized out of that conversation. And I believe the city council has been presented with a bill called TOPA, T-O-P-A, and that's Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act. Imagine if we put some of that money into a fund that would support TOPA so that everyone has a right to own. Because through TOPA, they have the right to be the first person to purchase their building when it goes up for sale and it becomes a co-op. So I believe we have everything that we need. We just have to get more innovative in our solutions.
Let me try to squeeze in some audience feedback. Peter in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I was just curious, what would have to happen to get Wegmans to put a store downtown? I don't want to whine about how I think it's a dereliction of duty with this community, what they're doing, and the fact that they wound up with the protesters. They get a pass. I mean, okay, kudos. You blocked Whole Foods. What do we have to do to go, dude, one store?
Okay. Well, do you feel that way, Peter, about the YMCA, which is closing another city location?
Yeah, all those would be nice. I mean, I get it. We're still a free market, and they're not going to be able to get the rates that they can at the Pittsburgh one. We need things. You drive through the city, and it's a sad, sad tale. So it's a big story, manufacturing, all the things that people need, lots and lots of jobs. But also, you know, Wegmans gets a pass.
Okay.
They're the golden child of Rochester. Why?
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
They left downtown because, they were fed up with whatever was going on at Midtown and everything. But it's just not, you know, every new store is a super store. And they've got 117 of them. They can't throw their hometown a bone.
Peter, I appreciate the phone call. Kim Smith, whether it's Wegmans, the YMCA's announcement today, do these organizations have, they're going to do what they've decided is best for them. And in Wegmans' case, in the YMCA's case, their bottom lines. Does city council have any role there, you know, to Peter's point on this, Kim?
I believe so. I think that, as you mentioned, Evan, of course they have a right to do what's best for themselves, but they also have to be responsible to our communities who frequent them and spend our money there. I remember as a child taking the bus with my aunt, shopping downtown at Wegmans and being able to catch a cab right in the back and go home. My son, I would drop him off at the Y downtown, and he really enjoyed that program. We are losing community resources, and as a result, we are losing our children. Our people are experiencing food deserts, and I do believe that council has a role here. I do believe that council has every right to step up to Mr. Wegman and say, hey, this is what we need you to be responsible for in our community, and this is what we need to see moving forward.
Lewis, what do you think?
Well, it's funny. When it comes to Wegmans, I think that when they left Midtown, it was more of a business decision versus what they wanted to do. I think it was the fact that downtown was becoming a desert, and you can't, if you don't have shoppers, you can't make money, you can't provide resources, you can't pay employees. You know, maybe with all this redevelopment downtown, that might be an option. It doesn't mean they're not talking about it. But also, we have to give kudos to Wegmans, because I could tell you that there's a lot of food coverage that get millions of dollars in donations in this county from the Wegman family. So, you know, I know that they give a lot to the community. I know they give a lot to community resources. So I don't think they've abandoned the community. I think the Midtown store was a business, strictly a business decision. Now with all the redevelopment, I'm sure they have an eye already on a couple spots or whatever, but I do agree. It's a conversation that can be had, and it should be had by whether it's the council president and the mayor, and showing a group force that, hey, what do we have to do to bring you back downtown with all this money that's going into downtown and redevelopment? So I don't think that, you know, the Wegman family said, hey, screw Rochester. I just feel that was a strictly a business decision. When they pulled out of Wegman, out of Midtown, Midtown and downtown were suffering badly. I'm not saying that the people that stayed there didn't deserve a store. I don't want to say that either. But I do feel with the redevelopment, I would like to know if they are eyeing something downtown. Maybe not a superstore, you know, a super center, but at least something.
Okay. Alex White.
Grocery stores require a population of about 35,000 to 50,000 people to support it. Downtown has a population of 5,500.
Exactly.
It's just not going to happen. I don't know what the city would have to pour money into this to make it happen, but if we're going to do this, why target just Wegmans? Let's have a co-op grocery store that's owned by the employees downtown, and let's target it to the population that comes downtown on the buses, that it would be convenient to have a place downtown that they could get out of the bus terminal and go shopping to, something much more like an Aldi's than like a Wegmans. You know, a Hart grocery store failed miserably downtown despite large subsidies from the city. You know, we don't want to be throwing money after bad businesses. But the city does have the opportunity to help with things like with recreation. It's one of the things they do. And with the Wise closing, these facilities that are built for this sole purpose have become available at convenient prices in the city. Should and city council should be looking at seeing if they can pick any of these up and turn them into operational community centers for people to enjoy the same sort of activities that the Y had been providing. And, you know, this strikes me as an opportunity that city council should get involved in, and we would have plenty of money to do so if we hadn't given away roughly $100 million yearly in tax breaks, much of it to the downtown area.
Let me ask as we close our guest to let our listeners know where they can find you online to learn more about you and your campaign for Rochester City Council. Kim Smith?
Yes, you can visit thepeopleslate.com.
Thepeopleslate.com. Louis Aponte.
Hey, I'm using whether it's Facebook under Louis Aponte, or they can reach me directly at Louis A. Aponte 124 in honor of Manny Ortiz, Officer Manny Ortiz, at gmail.com.
Alex White.
I'm using the webpage, alexwhiteforrochester.org. I'm at Alex White on Facebook. Alex White for Rochester is the campaign page on Facebook. And you can reach out to me at alexwhiteforrochester@gmail.com.
Alex White, thanks for making time for the program.
Love to.
Louis Aponte, thanks for making time, sir. Nice having you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Kim Smith, same. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Evan.
Three of the candidates for Rochester City Council. There are many. You will hear all of them, we hope, before the election at length. So you can prepare yourself as a voter. June 22nd, the primary in Rochester. Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.